This is Making Docs. I'm Paul, an aspiring documentary film producer.
And I'm Caroline, a freelance documentary director. We speak to industry professionals to get practical advice on the filmmaking process. In this episode, we're back at two-time Oscar-nominated documentary film production company, Spring Films. We meet again with the head of global development, Fix Jackman, this time to discuss the distribution process for documentary films.
So we're back at Spring Films in the cinema room.
Yes, with Fix sitting in a very bright yellow chair.
Thank you.
Beautiful chair.
No, I'm happy. It's cheerful. It's cheerful Friday.
It is. A late Friday afternoon.
Yes.
And we've all just finished our work and we have a nice glass of wine, courtesy of Spring Films.
So Why not? For that.
Why not?
Get them drunk. They don't know what I'm talking about.
Great tactic. I just want to dive in because the last time we spoke, Figs, we talked a lot about commission. That was the first episode that we did. And I was getting a little confused because you were talking a lot about how you can sell the projects that you have to entities like Netflix and the BBC, etc. But they would also show the film. So I was getting a bit confused between that line between commissioning the film with getting commission from Netflix, for example, and Netflix distributing the film onto their own platform. So commission and distribution is kind of merged together.
Yep.
And I just wondered if you could clarify what commission is and what distribution is.
Yeah, let's break it down. And again, stop me if I've gone off track and we've lost everybody. Let's look at it as we let the three of us here. I've got a film that we want to get funded. And let's say the budget is $100,000. Mm-hmm. So we can break down commissioning as funding that program to make it happen. So there's commissioning from a network or a network buying it when it's finished, which is an acquisition. The commissioning side means that we're going to them at this early stage to try and raise the money, try and raise this $100,000 hopefully from one person, mm-hmm. and they will effectively commission you to make this film. Mm-hmm. The normal terms, and this has all been changed as there is no normal, but traditionally with broadcasters, regional broadcasters, they will commission you almost as a licensing agreement. And by that I mean that they're paying you for the right to show it exclusively in their territory. So let's say the old model, BBC is going to commission us to make this film for $100,000 and they will take out a license for have exclusive rights for the 2 years. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Netflix and particularly the States in general, yeah. is that slightly changes because platforms obviously global and they're very interested obviously in North American rights. So it's still a Netflix original, and actually it's really important when you look at the credits. Mm-hmm. Even though they get crunched now, you could see Netflix original. That means that it's been commissioned by Netflix. Yeah. They've paid for that film
to be made.
And as with Netflix, it tends to be rather than a limited license, it's in perpetuity, so forever. So mm-hmm. they're buying it lock, stock and barrel. And they'll also buy it for worldwide rights more often than not. There are variables in this. It's not quite as straightforward.
So as a filmmaker, you don't need to worry about distribution because it's Netflix's film.
Correct.
They'll distribute that.
Correct. And because of that, you can charge a premium because we can't get what's known as secondary sales. Mm-hmm. So if I wind back on that commissioning phase, if it was the BBC, they've paid $100,000 to license in the UK for 2 years. In the UK for production companies, the rights revert to us for the rest of the world. We own the IP, the intellectual property, mm-hmm. so we can sell our program as an acquisition mm-hmm. to other territories such as Germany or France, mm-hmm. and that is distribution.
Let's go to the BBC.
It is, and it's not just the BBC. I know that has been the model, particularly in the UK for years. Less so in the States where contracts in the US try to hold that IP for the network. So when they're commissioning you, the money's more, but they try and get the intellectual property. but they're paying for that, and the money is a lot more. Just a little bit more in on the commissioning side is that if, let's say, the BBC are only going to offer 50,000 US for this project, then we need to find the other 50,000. How can we do that? And we either go to another territory, let's say France, and hope that maybe they plug that whole shortfall. And so we have two commissioners. It's a co-production. They might want their own versions. So basically, you're making the programme for France and Germany. These are then seen as originals for them, and they have exclusive right to show that for whichever broadcaster has commissioned it in that territory. The third model within that is, let's say we can't get another broadcaster, then you might get, let's say, a distribution advance that helps plug that gap, and that will be from a distributor, and they might come on board, plug that gap, and then in return they will want various different things, but they are basically saying, we love this program, we've done some pre-sales to see where we might be able to sell it when it's finished, we think we're going to recoup our 50,000 investment through these sales around the world. And that's a key difference, the word recoupment, because when it's a commission from the BBC or France, let's say Arte in France, their money, their 50,000 each or their $100,000 is not recoupable. They're paying you to make the film. When it's a distribution advance, it is recoupable.
So you have to keep like really track on who are you giving the rights. Let's say you said BBC for 2 years, UK. But if you sell it to a UK distributor, he only gets, or he or she, they only get the right for world sales, not for the UK, for these 2 years.
World and then secondary window for the UK sales.
Okay.
So this comes now on to the more specific subject of what's distribution. So let's say we've managed to make our program and it's a broadcaster, whoever it was, and we have our program. Woo! Nice reviews, good numbers and all that sort of stuff. We should avoid the streamers, even though they're clearly really important at the moment because of that fact that they buy it lock, stock and barrel. But if you have a program or a successful series, you then will sell it as what's known as an acquisition to a network around the world.
Yeah, so you sell it as a finished piece and say, this is what it is. I suppose you can recut it if they want that.
But they have to pay for that.
They have to pay for that.
Yeah.
Okay, but essentially you have a finished piece and you go, this is on the shelf, guys.
That's it. Exactly. And I just want to wind back just one sentence, is that when you are commissioned, they are your paymasters. They will have the ultimate say, the editorial control over what you are supplying them. And it doesn't matter how A-list you are, I think any filmmaker needs to understand that you might have editorial vision and this might be your greatest film of all time, but ultimately, if you're getting a commission, it doesn't matter. It's not even the traditional broadcasters. Whoever is paying for the film will have final sign-off on what they're receiving. So we've made our film. It's marvellous. Isn't this lovely? We're now going to try and distribute it beyond this commissioning process.
Do the people who commission you, do they have a say on how you distribute that as well?
No. They are really only interested in their own particular broadcast network. All of this, by the way, there are no hard, fast rules. So I really have to underline that. These are all general points, and again, I'm sure there are other examples, but and I'm cautious as well because it starts to unpack stuff where there are various deals and various things that are, you know, because networks are owned by somebody else and all those sorts of things. So that's all in these very long, boring contracts. But essentially, no. You have your finished program and we're going to try and sell it around the world as an acquisition, as I say. And as a real ballpark figure, as an acquisition, you're looking at, in the premium territories, by that I mean the biggest payers, not the most respected, the biggest payers. The biggest payers tend to be the UK, France, Germany, the US and Canada, Australia a bit. And they will roughly look at around about a tenth of what you could expect as a commission, as a very broad base. All of this is changing also because obviously networks and the streamers, etc., where this is changing. And I'm not just talking about networks here. There are obviously loads of other windows and really profitable ones in the education world and on planes and hotels and all that sort of stuff. But as a general rule, that's what you can expect. And then when you go to those sort of secondary territories, again, not derogatory at all, but when it's non-specific, such as, but you know, Greece and the rest of other places around Europe and smaller territories in terms of the market size, you might be looking at literally $1,500, $2,000 an hour, roughly paid. So how are we going to sell our film? How are we going to sell this as an acquisition? How are we going to distribute it beyond the initial network that's commissioned? Yeah. That's where a distributor comes in. That's something that Spring Films as a production company steps back from. And we will engage the services of a distributor such as Altitude or TVF or Beyond, or there's a number, Fremantle, Blue Ant. I'm name dropping because they're all actually really good people. They are very nice people. They act on our behalf. And for that, they take a not small slice of their sales, normally around about 25% plus their costs of the fees that they're negotiating. They will give you a report every 6 months or so to say where they've sold at various markets, and you can then see these huge profits that don't really exist of where they've been able to sell it. And that's kind of distribution in a very simplified way of, of there is a difference. It's almost where you're talking about, yes, Netflix distributes it to 160 countries, but distribution is the act of actually selling the content around the world. And of course, the emergence of all the streaming platforms has tipped this upside down in a great way, that fundamentally, if you get that big streaming sale and they want to take worldwide, you can get one distribution hit that isn't an original. So again, if you look on the credits of Netflix and you see a film that doesn't say Netflix original, then it's an acquisition. And so some of the acquisition team, they're mainly based in LA, will have bought your film from one of these sales agents, this distributor, and they would have licensed it. They're not necessarily licensing now in perpetuity. There are different license agreements, and that just depends on how much is being offered. And and you can geo-block this as well, in terms of you can stop. If it's already sold and there's already a license agreement, let's say in Germany, then someone like Netflix might take rest of the world minus Germany until that license fee runs out.
So if you manage to sell your product, your film, to a distributor, is that it? Then you can sit back and go, okay, well, I've sold it to them now. That's almost the job done, in that they will just sell this for me, because you have confidence in the skills and their business model, the fact that they sell these in all the time, that this will go somewhere.
Correct. What's really hard is, because the market's evolving, it's also where you're selling it's evolving. And it really does depend on what you're selling. So there is a certain degree of that. There's also a certain degree of, it's a misnomer to say you've sold it to a distributor. They've obviously just taken it. Now, as I said before, there are times where the distributor, if you've got a small bit of completion money to finish the film, they can come in with a, for a single doc, maybe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 maximum to finish your film. And I really think you're more looking at the $10,000 to $15,000 that can kind of help finish your film. And that's, again, recoupable. And it's often recoupable in what's known as a first position, i.e. the first $10,000 of your fee will go to recoup, and then everybody else is going to get paid. So, yes, a little bit of sitting back. There's also, without getting too really complexly boring, is distribution rights for theatrical. You know, if you've got a big film, and the Amy Winehouse film is the first one that comes to mind, and I don't know the ins and outs. I know that Altitude distributed here and were big parts of that success. But often those films, as an example, have different distributors in different territories, and they negotiate those rights from either the production company and or their agents. And this is all, I know this is kind of like, but that's where you're not really sitting back, because as a producer, you have to be aware that that can build in a lot of work because there's something called deliverables. And I know this is so, I hope you're with me on this, yeah. But it's so important. And it's stuff like, I come from a real creative world. And a lot of this stuff is, you're picking up. Mm-hmm. But actually, this is relevant, I think, to anyone that's making films now, because we might be talking a lot of the traditional ways, but a lot of those ways are coming through, permeating through all of mm-hmm. this, you know, all of the worlds. Mm-hmm. Because something called deliverables is about when you finish your film, mm-hmm. you have to make sure there's something called errors and omissions. So in other words, it's an insurance to make sure you're not libeling people and everything in your film is cleared, mm-hmm. i.e. music, photos, archive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, stick stuff on YouTube, wait for the lawyers to come calling, mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. But if you are making a film that you want distributed on any of these networks, you have to have all your deliverables paperwork in order. Mm-hmm. Netflix will not touch it without an E&O certificate and also the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. E&O certificate.
Yeah, it's basically an insurance that's being taken out. You take out a policy with an insurance company. It's normally about £3,500 per film. I know. Paul just looked up then. And it's so bloody boring. So if you as a filmmaker, and I'm thinking I'm a filmmaker, right? Yeah. If I'm making a film and you're at the markets like Sheffield or Idford is about to start now, yeah. and you're trying to get a distributor involved and you don't have this stuff, they yeah. can't take it and you can't get a sale. Because if you don't have this paperwork, then you are exposing them as distributors, as salespeople, mm-hmm. to any libel action if you've used stuff that isn't cleared. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know what, if you've really pissed off Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Showtime, you're not coming back.
You need to find another job.
You need to get this, you need to get this bit right. And trust me, I'm more than delighted to hand a lot of this over to the head of productions. But these are those important details of at least knowing that all your archive and everything is covered and it's mm-hmm. cleared, because you need that to take it to the next level to get these sales through. Because mm-hmm. deliverables is this package, literal and metaphorical, mm-hmm. that you hand over to the networks and the streamers. That's the tech specs, you know, of your actual film are all correct, and then there's all this stuff about everyone in the film has agreed to be in it, mm-hmm. and all those sort of details of archive use and music use have all been cleared, mm-hmm. so that then when this platform like Netflix, and this is exactly what happened to us with our Herzog film for Inferno, mm-hmm. we knew that there was a launch date. Yeah. And we knew that we had to get all of this in line, ready for this launch date, because it's getting launched into 168 territories. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, they can't pull it. You have to get, as a filmmaker, you have to get this paperwork. And I will tell you a small story.
Yeah, stories.
But we had an occasion where with that film where actually there was some really, there was some Russian Orthodox music that was being used, mm-hmm. and we were trying to clear it, and it was really difficult to clear. You're trying to find the publisher and the writer and all this stuff in Russia, you know, right up to the deadline. And in the end, we had to swap it out because we couldn't clear it in time, and we had to swap that out because we knew that it was not clearable and we couldn't make those mistakes. So, mm-hmm. but that is what it comes to when you're engaging a distributor. That's what distributing a film is. They're the nuts and bolts that you have to give over to a distributor. Mm-hmm. And often, and my last bit on that, is I mentioned about different distributors mm-hmm. taking over. So for our Meeting Gorbachev film, we have 4 or 5 distributors around the world. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got UK and Ireland, that's Altitude. Dogworth have got Europe, and if I get this wrong, sorry. We've got The Orchard, who have changed their name in the US, mm-hmm. And then there's somebody down in Australia as well. So as a production company or as a producer, you have mm-hmm. to be aware that each one of those needs their own form of paperwork and deliverables. Mm-hmm. So you're physically and literally delivering the film to 4 or 5 people.
It's a lot of work.
With all the paperwork.
Yeah, I know. I wish we could just turn on a camera and wave it, which of course you can, if you're just uploading stuff yourself and doing it all yourself. And I know we were talking just beforehand.
We'll get on to that in a second. I just want to cover, if I've made a film and I want to deal with a distributor or meet with them, what's the best way to get a meeting with a distributor?
That is a genuinely good question, because if you can imagine that if you have managed to get your film finished, and I would say to any filmmaker, to wind back before, of knowing who your audience is really important. But if you have got your finished product and you've managed to get there and you're not hideously in debt, which too many people I speak to, you know, are in that situation, it's being realistic. Are you going to recoup your costs? Not lightly. That's almost equity investment. Often you have to write those costs off, and that's a shocking thing to say. I get that. Mm-hmm. But to be aware of that when you're trying to produce stuff. But if you have got a finished film and there's, let's say, all worldwide rights are available, mm-hmm. Because you haven't had a broadcaster and it's raw, it's there, it's finished, mm-hmm. and you've got all that paperwork in place, to attract a distributor, I would suggest you have a brilliant tease, mm-hmm. 2 minute sizzle. It doesn't have to tell the story, but it's much the same way as trying to get a commission. Mm-hmm. You're still trying to attract a buyer, which is, in this case, is a distributor, although sadly there's not much money, but they will be your sales agent. I think that's the best way of calling them. And then I suggest, rather than expect the distributor to click on your full film and watch all of it, I suggest you spend time and take two or three moments from your film, 1 to 2 minute sections, and you send them with a short précis of why your film's incredible. Emphasize the narrative line, first time ever, this is the powerful story of, we have access to, for the unseen worlds, all the unique selling points of your film. And then if someone's engaged with that sort of package, then it's time that they want to see more. The second part, that those clips, it's not mandatory. I know people, you can send the tease and they'll say, yeah, great, send me the full thing. That's fine. But it's just, it again, being realistic and practical, you need obviously one distributor to say yes. It's nice if you've got two or three, because you can obviously pick what's the best fit. And that's something, again, we can talk about how do you know that? But it just giving someone a flavour, just giving someone, because you can tell, and even, I know this again is hideous, more often than not, people are not watching all your film, even if they're clicking on it. They are jumping through. They are like click, click, click. And that's how festivals work, because there physically isn't enough time. It's unreasonable to expect everything. To see everything. Yeah. And I know that people aren't comfortable with that. It's a reality. There is so much support in the industry. I really think that. And people are trying to do the best. But you cannot spend your whole day watching other people's films when you're meant to be bringing in income yourself.
Yeah.
Your job is to try and bring in income.
Mm.
I should explain a bit about distributors from the outside. Yeah. We're not a distributor. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking to those companies I'd mentioned before, and this is an outsider's view, and distributors can obviously tell me that I'm wrong, but... they tend to operate as a head of acquisitions or an acquisitions team. Their role is to source your film. They're the people who you should be contacting. Whoever is in the head of acquisitions or in the acquisitions team are the ones that are bringing your film on board into that company. The other half of the company is the sales team. They are the ones phone bashing, talking to the people at the conferences to sell your film. The two are clearly linked, but they're separate.
Okay. So as head of development for Spring Films, if you see that there's a new distribution company in a new space, how do you go about approaching that company to start a dialogue to take on one of your projects?
Let's say you've got a film that you think I really need to get it distributed through a traditional distributor. It's understanding what their speciality is. What else is else on there? You know, you go onto the website and you can see what Altitude is promoting and what they're selling, and they are blue chip, high-end feature documentaries in the main, scripted and non-scripted. You look at another distributor and they might specialise in comedy. There's others that might specialise in high-volume, serious content. Mm-hmm. Work out who your best place is. That can be seen in credits. You know, if you're looking at films and you've been, you know, you watch your stuff, look out for those end credits and see whose credits either coming up at the front. Distributors often try and throw their names at the front, which is much to my ire, because all they've done is watched it and said, we want it. Another point, not bitter. And then so when it says, I'm not going to name the company, they've had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. They've just bought it in-house, and then you look down the rest of the credits to see who the people actually made it. But look at those credits and look at who the end credits and the front end credits to get an idea of, do you want my film to be placed with these people because they have the specialism? They understand the market where I'd like my film to be shown and have an idea. Have an idea. It's not prescriptive and obviously people's advice, but know where you'd like that to sell. And I always underline this, don't just say Netflix. Who else? Where else might this go? Is there a market? You know, the education market is big. Could this be an educational tool? Could you reversion this as an acquisition for one of the streaming platforms who are doing short form content, whether or not it's YouTube Premium or Quibi, you know, and have that flexibility in mind. But knowing, again, it's just a simple bit of research rather than just blanket. You know,
so would your advice be to find the right distributor and then look for, on maybe LinkedIn or somewhere, someone who works in acquisitions for that distributor, contact them via LinkedIn or email coldly with your proposal? So is that how you would approach them, or would you go down the route of trying to meet these guys at a festival, or both?
Both. I think that is the value of the festivals. I know that it's very difficult to break through, and I know there's an elite kind of bubble that it can feel really wanky, you know. So,
but I think they do sessions now at the festival where you get, like, it's almost like a speed date with distributors.
Yeah, it's good. So. I think it's good. And if you are in those meetings, you're selling your product, but also, you know, have that confidence, but asking that advice, because people want relationships. They just want to know that you're not a loony, and then actually that you've got something to sell that's decent. Mm-hmm. And if they're interested, they'll get back to you. If they're half interested, don't be, you know, dissuaded from that. It's just that people are busy and they might need a jog. Just a reminder. But those things are valuable because they're looking for they are looking for content. You know, they are looking for to try and find those. But understand that single films, for example, as feature documentaries, if you turn on any broadcaster in this country, there is one avenue for them to sell that to. Mm-hmm. Storyville will pay £20,000 to £30,000 maximum. Fine, that's brilliant. But if you think the whole of the UK market for feature documentaries is all trying to be sold, whether or not it's Spring Films trying to get the money or a distributor, then those opportunities are limited. Where else can you go? You know, where else is possible to kind of distribute this film? So it's being realistic, but also trying to, you know, do a bit of your own research and having those expectations managed. The dream sale will be the one-off streaming buy. The secondary down from that, you're not going to get a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And distributing anything theatrically, unless it's the Amy film or Senna film, is not going to get you a load of money. Mm-hmm. The value of festivals, in my opinion, as a distribution window, it's like a showcase, mm-hmm. is that you could get some critical acclaim, maybe a nice award, the laurels that it's been mm-hmm. shown, that increases the value of your film. And there is, I know I was on Twitter the other day and someone was really arguing about this, against this, mm-hmm. saying this isn't the avenue. I agree with that, mm-hmm. but actually the one avenue that's really being, that's clear now, it's a clear path, mm-hmm. and it's more of a clear path to filter everything through, rightly or wrongly. If you're making a feature documentary and you're able to get into one of the four or five premium festivals, mm-hmm. that is Sundance, Toronto, Hot Docs, Tribeca, Sheffield, you are then taking your film up another level, mm-hmm. and buyers, i.e. distributors and or networks, are at these events. And if you win the audience award, my God, that's amazing, mm-hmm. at one of these events, you will then get approached by these buyers, mm-hmm. and in a dream scenario, you get people bidding for your film. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with Knock Down the House, the AOC film, and yet it made a load of money, 10 million or whatever it was. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. But I think as a filmmaker, we have to be, again, just to kind of distill all that is your dream scenario. They've made the film, it's got out there, it's been distributed, someone comes along with a check for 10 million. Wow. Mm-hmm. It's a wow moment, but let's think of the film. It's a great American story. It's an all-American dream. There's a success at the moment. The AOC is an incredible character, fantastic presence, unique on so many levels, and very sellable. So that's why that film can do very well, as well as it being a decent documentary and a good storyline. But the rest of us, you know, you're kind of finding, you're still trying to work on that basis of get a momentum. We're launching a film this week, tonight, now, at IDFA.
What film is that?
It's been made over 19 years. It's the story of Lia Mau, a trans story and a very powerful story. Mm-hmm. And our strategy, rightly or wrongly, is based around trying to get that momentum within the festivals, try and get some critical acclaim, mm-hmm. try and get that buzz, attract the Magnolias, the Kino Lorbas, those kind of film distributors in the US, as well as European distribution, and try and elevate it mm-hmm. to that point where it's a moment in cinema, mm-hmm. and then hopefully then that then transfers into sales, into streamers and others.
But you're mentioning something really important, I think, critical acclaim, especially for first-time independent filmmakers like we are, like most of our listeners are. What would you recommend in that sense? Like, I think money, getting the money back might not be an option. So receiving critical acclaim, trying to get as many people to see your film as possible, so you have the possibility to make a second feature or another film. Like, what would you recommend to filmmakers like us? Let's say we have a great film, we have a great first feature. This is our once in a lifetime chance to continue making what we love. Like, what would it be? What's more important?
I beg anybody to look at what Joshua Oppenheimer did mm-hmm. with The Act of Killing and Look of Silence. Joshua is a very long journey, and we were lucky to be associated with that. This is Joshua's film, mm-hmm. and Joshua spent a long time making both of them, but the initial launch of The Act of Killing, it's a very difficult to film, very difficult film to make, but it's also a very difficult film to sell. So how did he do that? And he did that because he utterly worked social media. He absolutely pushed mm-hmm. Twitter, all forms of social media platforms, and it amounts to self-promotion. He was driving that. You can't expect a distributor to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't expect a production company to do it. You have to do it yourself. And that is, I would say, without any apology, as important as your film itself. Because mm-hmm. you have to do that bit to get a Guardian article mm-hmm. or a great online article or a buzz around social media, that then creates its own momentum. And when the ball starts moving like that, then it starts to pick up, and Reuters might pick it up, and then that starts to get picked up around the world. But he kept on it, mm-hmm. and he kept on it all the way through that launch of The Act of Killing, and then likewise through For the Look of Silence. Mm-hmm. And any filmmaker, certainly you say it's a once and not a lifetime opportunity. Mm-hmm. It might not be quite that, you know, extreme, but it is an opportunity. And mm-hmm. to get a finished film, it is not enough to say, I've just directed this masterpiece that five people are going to see. You have to, if you're working alone or with one, two others, understand that it's that bit is as important as that moment of relief when you're in the edit suite and you go, it's finished, it's done. Mm-hmm.
And who can help you with that? A distribution company as well?
They can, but I wouldn't rely on it. Any support you're giving them is mm-hmm. going to help everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, this is your film. You have to do the hard yards as well. And it is. I know you said before, Paul, is that it sit back? Yes, it is. But if you really want that as a first-time filmmaker to take it to Joshua's level, he did that because he worked it.
There and
he
is
worked
no
it brilliantly.
Sitting back.
Never.
As a director.
Never.
I feel
and that's
lazy.
Why the Q&As are so important. And that's why, you know, being enthusiastic and being
I feel
really...
lazy now that I said that. But
I don't do anything.
I would have jumped onto
done.
A new project. I think that's what I would have done.
But, okay, so it's as a director, you have these responsibilities, working social media, thinking about the contracts with your contributors and having, like, all of this in mind, the legal aspects of a film when you want to sell it. What else can I think or keep in mind during the production? I know that I spoke to a couple of filmmakers who in the end wanted to sell their films and they never had production stills because they never thought about it while filming. Yeah. So they took stills from the edit, but it was obviously not like taking it with a photographer or something on set. So what else can you recommend? What do I have to keep in mind as a director?
That is a really good point, because I tell you what, no one has the budget, no one thinks someone can be asked, to be frank. You know, like, let's make the film, isn't it exciting? No, because you have to produce alongside your film, and those deliverables, all that paperwork, they ask you for a marketing package. Mm-hmm. And that marketing package includes stills, high-res stills that mm-hmm. they can blow up to proper big poster size that can be used around the world. And if you haven't taken them, then you're going to have to license them from an archive house like Getty and have to pay for them. And if you're not paying for them, it will be recoupable, you know, out of your sales anyway from the distributor. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good point. And I know it's so boring, but even just to spend 10, 15 minutes taking some really good portrait shots or some really good stills. And you don't have to have the greatest camera in the world, although it helps, you know, having something at least as a DSLR, you know, that you can do some decent shots. That's really important. Knowing your marketing, what are you going to do on the marketing? What is the unique selling point? What is the reason why people are going to watch your film? Because it's not enough to rely again on a distributor to do that. Mm-hmm. You are still driving that. Distributors' advantage are they have huge leverage. They have muscle in terms of sales. Some have output deals with various networks and streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. And an output deal might be in terms of hours, or your film, let's say, it's a tricky subject to sell individually. Mm-hmm. It might be packaged up with other films. And it's a reality. If the distributor, let's say, has a David Attenborough film on there or a series on their books, then you might be bundled into that package. Mm-hmm. But you're then getting a sale and it's going out on wherever. Mm. This actually comes down, I've just gotten on to my own, sorry, quick point, was again, distributors, we talked about which one works for your film. Mm-hmm. Broadly, you have the big mega ones, Fremantle, Blue Ant, or you have the more bespoke ones, Drive, Cats and Dogs, Sideways film. Look what suits you. It's really hard. There's no given answer on this. But the long and the short of it is they all have their merits and they all have, you know, their specialisms. But you can be a small fish in a big pond like the Fremantles or the Blue Ant, who have big leverage, or you're a big fish in a smaller pond who is a more boutique distributor. They might spend more time because they've got less on their books, but do they have the power to be able to get into all those places? I'm really not saying they don't. I'm just saying that, again, you have to weigh that up. And I don't have an answer for that because mm-hmm. they all have their merits.
If I'm an independent then, I've got a project that I'm working on, should I be, and I think we covered this in the last podcast as well, but should I be pairing up with a production company who has the experience of dealing with distributors so that I can get them involved at an early stage? And that production company can kind of take care of that side of the project. Or if I team up with a production company, is it likely that that side of the project, trying to get it distributed, is still going to land with the filmmaker?
No, if you're in a co-production, a relationship with a more established production company, then they'll help. You're in it together. Mm-hmm. So you're looking to get that distributed together. You're mm-hmm. taking it all the way through to delivery. Right. There are no hard and fast rules that I keep underlining because things are changing so much. But there is advantage of team having an umbrella company. And again, it depends on relationships and what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But we'll look at it as what can we bring to the table as well. Yeah, we might have a nice name, but where are we contributing? Mm. And there are some times where we can't. And so it's almost as well for them just to go off, because what value are we bringing to this? And I know that it's very hard to weigh how much creative value and the brand value can bring, but what are we really bringing to the table? So sometimes if you're nearly there, then, you know, it's just going to a distributor. We can help, but where's our monetary value? What can we charge for that when there's no budget to start with? Mm-hmm. So it's better often to be in nearer the beginning, or you've shot a bit and it's about getting that post-production finished. If someone's already in the edit and they come into a production company, then it's almost too late because you've already done the creative, you're already doing this. Where can we help that brings some monetary value, but where can we earn money as well without taking a slice of what you're waiting to recoup? So it doesn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. it's really difficult, I think, also as a filmmaker, it's really hard that you've made it yourself, you shot it yourself, you put it all together yourself, you've had editorial control. As beautiful a concept that is, I think there's a lot of value in having other people coming in who might have the experience of knowing where those, where you might be able to sell it or what you need to do to help sell it. Because you might have got this, what you think is a perfectly shaped film, and it might be, but that's very different to what can sell.
You started to take the conversation a different way before, and I pulled you back, but we started to talk about that there are other ways to distribute your film. So there are other platforms that will allow you as an independent to get your film out there and seen. Now, before we started the podcast, I used an example of one that I saw that was executed very successfully. The film was called Serial Killers, as in the breakfast cereal. Great title. I believe it was produced and developed by a guy who worked in marketing, and he saw the value in producing a piece of content, a film that explained how a low-carb diet worked, and he used himself in the film to be that vehicle of the story to explain that. He commissioned a documentary filmmaker with a, I believe, a one-off fee to create the film that he had in mind for him. And he self-distributed it, I believe he self-distributed it. I believe he put it online, and I think he charged, I don't know, a few pounds to be able to stream the film online and learn more about the low-carb diet. Now, at the time, the low-carb diet was a bit of a fad. We're talking, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, when it was a bit of a buzz. And I noticed online that that film had had hundreds, well, I think it had tens, if not hundreds of thousands of views. All of those views, I'm assuming, would have been paid for as well. So that guy probably made a lot of money from doing it that way. And I'm just wondering now if that is a good route to take if you have a more topical documentary than actually taking it to the distributors. Now, the distributors will see the value in it because it's topical, but could you potentially make a lot more money by doing it yourself.
Absolutely. I think this is brilliant. I just think this is brilliant, and that's what the freedom of everything now that's at our disposal has given us. The caveats, of course, is how do you attract your audience? How do you, and the title is a really good example. A title is a huge thing. You get a great, brilliant, snappy title and you get clicks because of the title, then you're going to drive an audience. And how you then drive that, again, is up to you to drive that social media to continue that momentum.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I'm assuming because it was produced by a marketing manager that he would have he would have done the social media work.
Absolutely.
Behind
Everyone knows the metadata of and the analytics of who you can target and where that and how that also works. And hooking into that information or having access to that information is basically what Netflix and everybody else does anyway. Mm-hmm. Your film is not always being bought or sold on a question of it's just a great film. They are looking at the audience, their own audiences, what stuff their audiences are watching, and they're doing their own analysis and they've got all that data. So if you are making something that particularly appeals to that network, let's say it's royalty and it's ITV as the old school way of looking at it, then you are going to get a sale because that hits their audience responses. And obviously Netflix, as I say, as I keep saying Netflix, but I really want that to be the broader example. They all know their audience. So they're doing that. So if you're doing that as a self-distributor, you know, with that information and with someone that could supply that, brilliant. And you're circumventing the distributor. They won't like this at all, but you're not paying your 25% plus costs. You have that freedom. You have that control. You have very little cost coming back, just so long as you have your archive and everything cleared and music cleared. So because I'm an advocate of that, because you are setting yourself up for a fall if you're doing this on a big scale, because if there are any legals and you get hit somewhere down the line, then that's not going to be pretty. But if you're doing that, brilliant. All power to you.
What kind of platforms could I use?
There's a couple that I'm aware of and I've heard good things about. One particular that's come across my path recently is a platform called Velour. So it's V-U-U-L-R. They're based in Singapore. And the concept is quite simple. You upload your film onto their platform. You show what rights are available. It's then a buyer's showcase. So let's say I'm coming on board. I'm going onto the site as, let's say, I have a network in India and I'm looking to acquire content. Valour is a distributor, mm-hmm. effectively a distribution platform. I then go on and let's say I'm looking for a really good sports documentary series or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I will look into that and I will see that your film is up there about the history of cricket, blah, blah, blah. And I will go, I really want that film for my platform. I can online make you an offer.
Yeah.
That offer goes straight to the producers. Mm-hmm. You decide or counter offer whether or not that's any good, mm-hmm. and the terms offered, 5 years for India exclusive, mm-hmm. and then eventually we come to an agreement and Valour takes 10% of the agreed fee.
Agreed. Okay.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's, you know, and whether or not...
In terms of self-distribution, it's great, yeah.
Yeah, whether or not, and I talked to them at MIP recently, and, you know, it's an open platform in terms of mm-hmm. you can do that. We haven't used it yet. They've been in touch. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we're not interested. Just haven't got around to it. But I think it's a really good way of doing things. And though that's a kind of a freedom, that is sort of self-distribution in a different way. The other platform that I think that a similar sort of framework, mm-hmm. it's more curated. That mm-hmm. isn't curated from my conversations. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to at some stage. Because you need some filter, because otherwise it's like how, as a buyer, can you wade through this? But Little Dot, they're basically, it's an online platform, mm-hmm. upload content, and there is a revenue share on watches and clicks and watches. Okay. And Little Dot, this works, the conversations I've had is that longer form is really work. This isn't just about short form stuff. So longer form is a sweet spot. And I can't remember their exact numbers they gave me for the average viewing, but you're talking of tens of minutes, mm-hmm. not 5-10 minutes. So we're talking full length content. Yeah. Yes, there's no fee up front, but with Little Dot, you are getting a revenue stream from how many views. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that as a filmmaker, it's how then do we drive that traffic to that platform, mm-hmm. and that's something obviously a conversation with Little Dot is how they're promoting your film that you have to have, but also then you should be thinking about how you're doing that yourself as a filmmaker.
I suppose that's the difference between the two, is that by going down the distribution route and selling it to a distributor or giving it to a distributor to kind of make that sale, they're doing the work for you. It's going to a network. It gets shown. You make money. With the alternative route of trying to put it onto a platform online and self-distribute it, you have to put the legwork into driving people to the platform to watch your film. And that could be very expensive. So maybe if you have the money up front, that could be a great route to take. But if you don't, then how will that become a success? You would have to hope that it goes viral or...
I honestly think every single, anything creative, film, music, art, you have to self-promote. If we now even take a moment to step back and think of all the really big, well-known pieces of art, but more significantly, the artists of our generation and the last 100 years, mm-hmm. all of those big artists have been brilliant at self-promotion. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not it's understated like Hockney, mm-hmm. Dali, through to, you know, today and Damien Hirst and everyone else in between, Francis Bacon, they were all brilliant at their own self-publicity. And I think that that goes for directors too. And I'm not going to go through those names, but that's the reality. Your film stands, but actually... you have to support it as well. And that's to take it up to those next levels. But even if, for example, you know, we've got something that's broadcasting tonight on Sky, which was a music documentary, you still need to promote that yourself. Not that it's going to make a massive dent in how many viewers there's going to be, But what it can mean is that if you do get a big load of viewers or a big lot of press or whatever, that can help further sales down the line. Mm. So all the way, there are very, very, very few films, and I can think of one or two, and there really are ridiculous films like Star Wars and any of the Marvel franchises that will self-promote themselves. Mm-hmm. You have to do it yourself, and it's really easy for me to sit here and say that but I get it. You can't. Mm-hmm. You have to, and if you're good at it, as Joshua is, then you get the rewards.
So as Spring Films played around with the different platforms to kind of distribute stuff, or do you just go down the traditional distribution route? Because I know that there's Amazon that you can put your film on, there's iTunes, there's a host of different platforms. Have you experimented with those with Spring?
Yeah, very much. I think it's a completely open mind now. And I think the example I have is the most recent one, where I saw the Maradona film, mm-hmm. which is, again, an Aotearoa film in Sheffield, world premiere, Sheffield Dockfest. And then 3 months later, I'm on a plane and it's available to watch on a plane. And I talked to a distributor, said, how is that working? You know, what happened to the exclusivity, the windows, mm-hmm. or what they called, you know, that time frame where you can only see it in the cinema, mm-hmm. is a window. It's like a broadcast window. What about all those exclusives? You know, before you could never see a big film until 6 months later. Yeah. On the TV. And another example is obviously The Irishman, that's in the cinemas, available on Netflix as of virtually the same time. These are extraordinary times in terms of how all of that is fluid, and there's no hard and fast rule of how those successes are. So I asked this distributor about the Maradona film, and I said, how is that possible? How is it? And she was saying, look, there's a flexibility now. We understand that if you watch it on a plane, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to cancel your Netflix subscription because that film is available on the plane. Mm. You choose where and when you want to watch it. And sometimes those factors are obviously financial, but sometimes it's like, I'm in the mood to see this on the big screen, or I'm not that fussed about this film, I can watch it on a smaller screen. Mm. Or I've got a kid now, I can't go to the movies, but I will still watch it on the small, you know, on a Netflix. So it's all these factors that means that there's a flexibility about how you distribute a film, and there's no hard, fast rule, and there's no right way of doing it, which means as a producer, you can then think, well, all right, let's follow a path. And there's a couple of real innovative things that we're trying to work through, which we haven't got to yet, mm-hmm. where can you launch a one night only, you know, these big event screenings? Can you do that alongside a sporting platform, pay-per-view sporting platform? Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. You know, these are things, you know, we're throwing out there. Mm-hmm. Kind of get a revenue and a buzz and a way of seeing stuff, because let's face it, we're all looking at our phones through to a big screen and everything else in between. We just want good stuff, and we want to watch it and choose when we want to watch it, which is what I love about the fact of self-distribution and the way that we can watch stuff in different places, in different modes, and we're not constrained to, mm-hmm. coming up, mm-hmm. 9 o'clock on ITV. Mm-hmm. It's this. That's gone. Mm-hmm. Schedulers, you know, and that whole world is about to go, and I'm massively in favour of that. I think it's the way that it should be, the way that it is for so many people anyway. Mm-hmm. But it means as a distributor, you can then work in different ways, mm-hmm. to get your film out there. You just need the support. And that's where, as I say, these different distributors can come in.
And you might watch it two times, because I think like a film like Roma, I've seen it in theatres and cinema and on Netflix later. So because exactly. You kind of think, oh, this is a film you should see in the cinema.
Yeah.
And as the lady said, it doesn't mean that I cancelled my Netflix subscription. Why? Why would I?
Absolutely. I agree with that.
I have a question, Fix, in terms of production company. You're talking about Spring Films is a production company, so you rely and separate yourself from distribution companies. But I'm kind of thinking, as a producer or production company, you have a great understanding of the market. You have to, as well as a director. You kind of have to understand your audience. You have to understand where you get your film to. So why do you still think that someone should go to a distribution company if you can say yourself as a producer or production company, I have an understanding, I could do this myself?
Good question. And effectively, it's about relationships. Okay. There are very often, I'm talking to commissioners who commission, whereas there are buyers within the networks who are acquiring. Some commissioners will buy acquisitions too, but often it's a separate department or a separate conversation. So within Netflix, I'll talk to the commissioners, whereas distributors will talk to the acquisitions team. And by that, I mean that they have those relationships. They sell volume, hundreds of hours a year to these acquisitions people. They've built those relationships. The acquisitions people also know that those relationships, let's say it's with a big distributor, might also include something that they really want. So that's what I talked about, packaging up, that it's like, well, you might have this thing I really want, and yes, you can bolt on those couple of other bits. That helps a filmmaker. So you can't do it all. It's a small world, and I think to self-distribute as a filmmaker is extremely difficult because you don't have those relationships. You're certainly, if you're selling a single film will always be way down the order of a successful series. If I'm a distributor who has a successful format, such as Bake Off or such as The Apprentice or The Voice or those sorts of things, those things are big profit. They drive advertising, whether or not it's literal advertising or, you know, so they are the money. Your small single film, no matter how brilliant, is a small proportion of those sales. So who you need the leverage. And as Spring Films, we work closely with the distributors, but ultimately their conversations are very difficult. And actually, I have to say that, again, getting a commission, well, I don't want to put a value on it, but because of the much more money that's involved, is harder than getting an acquisition sale, because it's just you're buying hours, and obviously networks want to balance their originals with their acquisitions. But ultimately, any acquisitions that they're getting on the cheap allows them to put more money, in theory, into their originals. But it's easy. It's an easier conversation if I'm spending $10,000 with you buying your already finished film that I've already seen and I know there's not going to be a problem, than committing $100,000 to Paul's film, which hasn't been made yet. I'm trying to work out whether or not we've got real access.
I'm always behind.
Yeah.
But I'm lazy.
But you're a beautiful person and your vision is incredible. It's just yours is finished. So yeah, Caroline's is finished. Paul's isn't finished. So I might buy 10 hours off you, Caroline. I know it's like 10 1 hours that are finished and it's got loads of awards and critical acclaim in where it was originally sold. Whereas Paul, you're obviously a bit more of a risk, but I'm spending the same amount of money. Distributors sell volume, you know, a lot more than me trying to get permission away. But for me to start that process as a producer is just too hard, because I'm then picking up the phone to, let's say, your network, and now I have 2 hours to sell you. It's like, really?
Yeah.
I want to hear about the 50 hours. You know, I want to do a big deal. I haven't got time just to buy your 2 hour thing. Yeah. So it's just the way it is.
What I'm a bit unclear on is how much money can I make from distribution? Like, what is the potential of it? Are we talking anywhere from 10,000 to 10 million?
I wouldn't even go that high.
Damn it.
No, and that's a reality.
So you're talking up to hundreds of thousands,
if at best. Okay. If you don't get the streaming sale or the US acquisition sale, which is really difficult, and I don't want to end on a really low note.
This is the reality.
Yeah, which is where also
passion job.
Yeah, but also where self distribution comes in, which is why I keep saying there's no crock of gold. Mm-hmm. No, but if we could all just stick our films up and then all of a sudden the lottery starts and the money starts flying out of our computers, then brilliant. But that isn't the truth. There is a real reality when you are getting your returns from distributors for normal acquisition sales, i.e. traditional broadcasters, aeroplanes, hotels, all those, you are talking maximum tens of thousands reward. Mm-hmm. And if you know that a film is going to cost you that, you're lucky to break even. Exactly. So any filmmakers, I think, should be really aware before you start really committing yourself. If you're not getting traction from your local broadcasters or region, if you're, it's not just UK, if there's filmmakers from, obviously, I'd encourage anybody to really tap into your, wherever your heritage is and wherever you can tap into regional funds, 100%, because we don't have it here so much. But if you are not getting traction within that, then you need to think very hard about your project, because you are not going to get the sales further down the line. And you are then in a position where, do you commit your own money or family money or other people's money to make this film happen? Mm-hmm. If you can afford to do that, brilliant. But to be aware that you are going in deep then, and bottom line is the distribution sales are likely to be maximum 40, 50, 60,000 pounds as a big broad-based example for a one-hour film. So just be mindful.
On that depressing note,
no,
our last question.
Caroline, I wanted to be optimistic. I did.
No, you go for it.
Please. Can I do a happy song?
Yeah, we'll play some happy songs in the back.
I do think there's a lot of potential in self-distribution. If you can nail the promotion of your film, like you said, with Joshua Oppenheimer, who really work social media, and you back it online, there is potential to make money from doing it that way.
100%, and this is why I've talked in the past, when we talked about, is there any brand support, is there support elsewhere, it doesn't have to be an advertorial, you know, how can you get your thing made? And the freedom of form now to allow you to do that episodically, one-off, whatever it is, I'm 100% in favour of that. I think it's brilliant also for filmmakers to have that freedom. You haven't got notes. Mm-hmm. Trust me, you're getting notes from commissioners that can go onto pages, because there's so much money involved. Jobs are on the line. Yeah. This is a freedom. That is the way of finding those platforms and those ways forward. People are doing it anyway. We're not talking about anything that people aren't doing. Mm-hmm. It's clearly, you gave the example, but it was more that I would push people to say, go for it and go for short form stuff and see how that's working. And then there's less of a commitment, because if it really screws up and nothing happens, you've spent maybe a couple of grand maximum. No one could drop a couple of grand and not worry about it, but it's a less of a commitment, less time. You know, you've actually got something out there that stands there, and it's a great showcase as well, because you still might think it's brilliant. It might still be brilliant, but people didn't watch it. But it's something else that can help you get further funding, because you can show that you can do something. 100%, 100%.
Mm-hmm. So make a film about low-carb diets.
No, that's already gone.
Titles.
Your friend did.
Make a film. Make a film with a great title.
Okay.
So that's one tip.
Yeah.
What are your top three tips for getting your film distributed? You've covered a lot in this podcast, but you spoke a little bit about getting that killer trailer or singular clips.
Yep.
Do you have any other tips like that?
It's that. Yep. Brilliant teaser, clear USP, passion. You know you got to do it yourself. So do it yourself. Be enthusiastic. If you're down on your film, don't expect other people to love it. Mm-hmm. So the enthusiasm in Q&As, you are the promotion for your film. You are the soul of that film. You are the future of that film if you really believe in it. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that from not just now, not just when you're making it, not just at post, but all the way through to the promotion at the end.
That was very positive.
Great.
I'd like to end the podcast. That was amazing.
Great. Thanks for your time. Thanks.
Thank you. Good luck, everyone.